of loyalty metrics, really. Nearly everything in the paper has sort of significantly jumped in the last 2 years. The British are loving their loyalty programmes even more than ever before. So 97% of the British adult population are fans of at least one loyalty programme. It's a brilliant time to be working in loyalty marketing, and I hope, you know, we sort of hope that maybe our research has been a little bit a part of that in terms of helping loyalty programs understand what people have needed at different times and then actually adapting their approach. So I think loyalty is definitely getting smarter.
Hi, I'm Ian Pringle. This is the Loyalty Podcast from New World Loyalty. We help you make the most of your loyalty strategies by listening to us talk about what we like to talk about most, which is loyalty and loyalty programs. In 2024, it'll be my 30th year working in the loyalty industry. And over this time, I've seen the loyalty market slowly evolve. But in the last year, we've seen radical change in the UK market in particular. To explore this fascinating development, I'm joined by three guests who have measured these changes. So please can I welcome Nick Fishbourne from YouGov. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
And Charlie Hills from Mander Connect. Hi, Charlie.
Hello.
And James Davies from Mander Connect too. Hi, James.
Hiya.
Perfect. So to get us started tonight, Nick, can you tell us a bit about the study and how you did it, the methodology?
Yeah, of course. So I represent YouGov in this partnership, and we've been working with Charlie and James at the team at Mando for a number of years. And our role in this white paper is to provide the data that fuels the insight that you can read about. Now, all the data in the white paper has come from our syndicated data product called YouGov Profiles. Now, the easiest way to get your head around profiles is to think of it as an enormous interactive data bank. So in the UK, we have data on about 300,000 different consumers. Our clients use the platform for audience analysis and profiling because we have literally thousands of different data points on these consumers. So we might have information on things like their standard demographic data, whether they're employed, do they have kids, what's their life stage. We'll also have things like media consumption. So what television do you watch? What do you listen to the radio? We'll have banking habits. You know, do you hold credit cards? Where do you shop? What sport do you play? What sport do you follow? Literally anything in this platform. We're collecting data as a company constantly. So every day of the week, we're collecting data and we feed this data into profiles. It updates on a weekly basis. We drop off old data from a year ago and we pick up new data every single week. So it provides a really valuable tool for understanding consumer perception and behavior in the present.
And is the loyalty data then a piece on top of that? That's a profile specific for this piece of work?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd say it's a piece within it. So, you know, alongside all the other data points we have, we're also asking people about their loyalty behavior, their loyalty perceptions. We also have a completely separate platform called Brand Index, where we're tracking consumer perceptions to I think it's something like 1600 different brands in the UK. So that data also feeds into profiles. So it's a really powerful tool for being able to understand the impact that loyalty is having on consumers, but through the lens of you know, different types of consumers or consumers that are members or users of different brands as well.
Perfect. And Charlie, can you talk about Britain's growing obsession with loyalty and its history? Because
yeah,
you can see that
of course.
Over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fascinating. So we started in 2018 doing the What the British Want from Loyalty Programs tracking study with YouGov. And it's a combination of, you know, looking at the overall membership appeal and impact of loyalty programs in Britain. But then also we add in every year sort of the hot topics, you know, what types of rewards people want, how important is sustainability, what impact is the cost of living crisis having during the pandemic, you know, what impact did that have on loyalty attitudes and behaviours as well. So we're really passionate about what's finding out about what's actually going on and what people actually want at a national level. And the glory of the data is obviously the white papers, the What the British Wants series are really the show ponies. It's the nationally representative sample, but we can also look at everything in the white paper by particular demographics or segments or attitudinal groups or customer groups or members of different programs. So it's a really thorough and robust approach to actually exploring what's really going on, not what people just think is going on. So it's been fascinating to watch since 2018 what's happened to loyalty behaviours and attitudes. And in the last 2 years, in the sort of the new normal world that we work in, we've seen an explosion of loyalty metrics, really. Nearly everything in the paper has sort of significantly jumped in the last 2 years. So, for example, members, we've now got 79% of the British adult population are members of at least one programme. So that's pretty much 8 in 10 of us are members of loyalty programmes, which is great. And actually, we looked at, you know, how many programmes, because, you know, at least one is an interesting insight, but not perhaps the full story. And so what we now see in that adult population is that they're on average members of 6 loyalty programmes. And that's up from 4 2 years ago. So net penetration has grown, but also the number of programmes that people are joining has increased significantly. And within that 6, they're saying they are actively engaged with 3. So we've got, for the first time ever, the sort of benchmark active rate in the British market of 51%, which is really interesting, because we know that loyalty programme owners are trying to get people in, but also actually you want those valuable behaviours once they're in the programme. So I think it's really good news for membership. On the flip side of the coin, you know, we don't just look at behaviour. I think the days of thinking about loyalty marketing as just transactional and functional are long gone. So we also look at the emotional and the softer metrics, you know, how the British population feeling about loyalty programs. You know, are they held hostage to them? Is that why they're joining? It was a bit of a hypothesis. And actually what we've seen is quite the opposite. So the British are loving their loyalty programs even more than ever before. So 97% of the British adult population are fans of at least one loyalty programme. 74% think they're a great way to reward customers, and 54% actually think all brands should have one. So we've got this lovely sort of zeitgeist moment where everybody's a member. We've got heavy sort of active levels, but actually fandom and love for loyalty programmes has really exploded. So it's a brilliant time to be working in loyalty marketing. And I hope, you know, we sort of hope that maybe our research has been a little bit a part of that in terms of helping loyalty programs understand what people have needed at different times and then actually adapting their approach. So I think loyalty is definitely getting smarter. So yeah, it's a great time.
I mean, I think this is where the corner was turned, because you started your study in 2018, but actually since I think 2013, because there's been other studies previously, and yeah. I've been saying for a long time that loyalty, particularly with the big programs, has been in a slow decline since 2013. I think 2013 was the height of the likes of Nectar, Tesco Clubcard and others, Boots and Vantage in the UK. And since then, they've been falling. And your study's shown that. So your study showed supermarkets and pharmacies, well, supermarkets falling from 66% penetration in 2018, then 64, then 56 in 2022. Yeah. But then it's ticked up again in pharmacies, in supermarkets, in restaurants. And is that a trend? I mean, what do you think's driving those trends?
I think opportunities to engage was a big challenge, and also, you know, investment from those brands and the structure of those loyalty programs had a big impact as well. So what we saw during the pandemic and during cost reduction exercises was less investment from brands in their loyalty program, less opportunities for customers engage. And so naturally they dropped off. You know, we weren't legally allowed to go really to the supermarket that often during those periods. You know, you weren't allowed to go out for leisure. So naturally it dropped off. But then what we've seen in the last 2 years is a real rise across all sectors. So we've seen supermarket penetration up to 67%, retail, you know, at 37%, actually gone into the number 2 spot for sector, overtaken pharmacies, which is now at 32%. And then the big new news is really what's happened in diet eating out, coffees and restaurants, you know, a massive increase to 28% penetration. And I think that's been driven by a recognition across that industry that their existing customers are so valuable. They need to invest in keeping them and keeping them happy and keeping them engaged and learning who they are and understanding through their loyalty program their behaviors and their attitudes, so they can then kind of grow more value from that base. You know, 2 years ago we didn't have My McDonald's wasn't there. Costa has obviously done the big relaunch. We've seen new programs from the likes of Costa Pizza Express. We've seen Nando's really invest in their program. we've seen KFC Rewards Arcade, you know, really shake things up. So I think it's a really interesting time and a really interesting sector. So, you know, we always used to talk about the big three sectors, and I'm not sure that we're that far off talking about the big four now. I think for our 2026 paper, we'll be probably looking at the big four, not the big three.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, coffee being now but 28%. So coffee and restaurants being 28, then pharmacies 37, then supermarkets 67. It is a significant, they're now a significant player in the market. I mean, yeah. I'm not sure I'd agree with the other, because I think the other sectors have been fairly static, I'd say, from looking at the figures. So things like banks have only moved up one. But so do you think the main driver of this has been the movement of the supermarkets moving to member-only rewards? I mean, James, have you seen that?
It's really interesting. I think across the board, and again, this is one of the YouGov data points that we track, it's the impact of the cost of living crisis and how that's affected members of loyalty programs and the general public in terms of actually how likely they are to kind of engage with both promotions and loyalty schemes. And since the pandemic and during the pandemic, there was a big increase. And following on from that, during the cost of living crisis, we've seen an uptick in just the number of people actually looking to utilize loyalty programs on a regular basis to help them kind of cover costs as well. So I think there's an element of the kind of consumer impact and actually people looking for more, and also that the loyalty programs themselves have responded to that in a really sensible way. I mean, we've seen member pricing, as you say, kind of coming in, and that's definitely impacted the number of people who are engaging with supermarkets, for example. And yeah, I mean, we're starting to see it in some of the other sectors as well.
Yeah, and I think member pricing is such an interesting area, for it's one way that a loyalty program can give real value back to its membership and quantify the value that it's giving to household budgets. But we've seen programs do other things as well. I mean, obviously member pricing somewhat controversially under investigation by the CMA at the moment. And it's one of the tactics that programs can use to give value back to their consumers, but not the only one. We've also seen a big rise in lower value rewards that we talked about a lot actually at the launch event at Loyalty Dynamics for the paper, which was a really interesting shift to actually see how programs could do things differently. The other things that we've seen is, you know, the rise of discounts, and actually, you know, early access to things coming through is a nice way of giving people value without necessarily having to increase your reward budget significantly. We've seen service benefits come through as well, where brands are actually looking at their own ecosystem and that of their partners to see how can, you know, what have I got that's free but that's really valuable to my customers that I can offer up as a reward and a benefit within the program. And then the last kind of big bit of news that we've seen is really the rise of partnerships within loyalty programs as well. So, you know, we've hit a whopping 63% of the British adult population that want partner rewards from their loyalty program. And we've got a really savvy population. And we think part of what's driving that huge demand for partner rewards is that they know they get more for less. They know they get a better reward. You know, when Sky VIP does a partnership, it can offer them a much higher value reward because both brands are putting in the budget to that reward. So we've seen a big increase there in value rewards. When Very Me Rewards from Vodafone, you know, is giving away free coffees, that's really motivating. And we put some other brilliant case studies in the white paper itself about how programs are working really smartly with brand partners to give more to their customers, but also keep a sort of cap on their reward budgets themselves. So there's lots of different tactics. Member pricing is a big one, but it's not the only one.
Yeah, and I think apps have become better as well. So I think apps have struggled to engage with their customers. They've been very transactional. But I was at a workshop last week where two members of the workshop were really evangelizing about the apps that are, and I know you've been working with some of those. Would you say that too, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, we were very privileged to be part of the team that launched Lidl Plus in the UK, you know, the first sort of positive disruptor to grocery loyalty for years, you know, no points, no card, no fuss, just Lidl Plus. And what we saw from the outset with that programme was a huge propensity for consumers to engage with the app. You know, it's a very well designed app. It's got great UX to it. And that real investment in the experience of the loyalty programme has really paid back. I think, not to mention, obviously, it's also better for the environment. environment not to have a card. It's better for the budget because you're not sending out cards. And actually, customers have got it on their phones and all those store staff really know how to use it. So I think that was, you know, that was a great privilege. It was quite a bold move when we did it. And actually, we're really, you know, we're pleased with the results of that. I think what we've then seen in other programs is a shift to move customers away from older mechanics to app-based mechanics. And that's hard to change behaviours. You know, again, at the event, we worked very closely with the behavioural science team who you saw at Ogilvy, and they're experts in how do you actually nudge behaviours and digital adoption when you're used to an old-fashioned plastic card in your wallet is quite something. You know, largely, the rise of Apple Pay and Google Pay, I think, are probably what's changing behaviour more than perhaps all the marketing comms that we're sort of pushing out there to shift those behaviours, because people are just used to paying on their phone now, in the same way that the pandemic taught us all to use QR codes. So yeah, it's an interesting time. I would agree that the apps are definitely getting better, though not all of them. Some of them are still terrible.
No, and in the research I've seen, you know, 50% of customers, it's just starting to cross the edge where 50%, it's now 50-50 about whether people prefer a plastic card or an app. And of course, there's lots of good structural reasons why you'd go for either or as well.
Well, I mean, we also work on programs where we don't even have an app. So we've won a lot of awards with Voxy Drop, who's a really cool loyalty program targeted at Gen Z for the youth network that's powered by Vodafone. And that program doesn't even have, you know, doesn't have a mechanic at all. It's all done through social media and email. So I think that, you know, there's really interesting ways to develop loyalty mechanics as well. I'm not even sure that the question is, do you need an app or do you need a card? I think actually it's, do you need an app, do you need a card, or what's the right way that your customers engage with you?
Yeah, but I think that's the point. I think with Lidl is that I think that their brand gives them license to do things that they do within the app that you perhaps wouldn't do if you were Sainsbury's or M&S. And I think it has that authenticity that customers can recognise.
Yeah.
Now, moving through to how Brits want their rewards and how they feel about rewards, there was some really valuable stuff in there. Does someone want to talk me through that as well?
Yeah, sure. So it's again something that we've tracked actually since 2018, and it's fascinating to see how the preferences have kind of changed kind of year on year. Obviously, the big news this year in the 2024 paper is that Brits are really looking for the rewards to kind of save them money and act as that little kind of treat for them. Those are by far the kind of highest two responses, kind of just under 60% for saving me money and 37% for a treat for me. I think that's, again, kind of recognises the state of consumer finances recently.
They were already very high. They're now boosted up significantly.
Definitely. It's as I say, people turning to loyalty programmes to kind of help save them a little bit of money. But then, because they are kind of foregoing those kind of treats. We spoke about it at the event again, talking about the kind of classic lipstick effect and actually people really, really looking for those little kind of constant treats just to have a little bit of a bonus and a bit of a boost for them in a way that maybe they're not getting in their kind of everyday life at the moment because they're having to kind of cut costs elsewhere.
I think that's maybe where the brand partnerships have a role to play as well, that they add another dynamic to the program so people can get variety and excitement and a treat that's outside of their day-to-day as a result of that brand partnership. I find them hugely interesting from the perspective of how brands can borrow from each other's brand equity. And you can see that play out in data during these partnerships where I'm always pleased when I'm on a podcast and I can use the word synergy, but you can see the synergy of the two brands, and they do become, you know, more than the sum of the two parts. I find that area of commerce really fascinating.
The other one that I was really pleased to see was the rewards offered should be fun. That was the largest rise of is now rised up to 13%, so that's a 47% increase since the last time. And I've been saying this for a long time, where we're now in the entertainment business, right? If you've got that many apps in your phone, or you need to cut through to your customers, we have to recognize that we need to make it interesting and fun, and I love to see that. And Charlie, do you think that's again a reflection of some of the brands that have done a very good job of making moving from being a transactional loyalty program to being, you can still be transactional, but then you need to add that element of fun in there too.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And actually, that recognition that people need to enjoy the loyalty experience is something that we've then seen reflected in the consumer experience of those loyalty programs. So gone are the days where it's 17 clicks and 14 forms to fill out to claim your reward. You know, that seamlessness, that speed is really important. But I think that joy is really important as well as part of the loyalty experience. We talked about joyality, you know, Adam Posner, over in Australia.
The ghost of Adam is forever present.
Yeah, but I think it's really important. You know, I feel like we've been talking about gamification for a long time, but actually gamification is really coming through now. So we've seen, linked to fun, a huge rise in the number of promotions that loyalty programs are operating for their audience. And, you know, not just they're doing the simple, you know, enter and win, but actually they're really focusing on the experience of that promotion and the fun of it. So, you know, we talked about Little Plus's spin experiences. We talked about the augmented reality Elf and Seek promotion that Vodafone ran at Christmas. And I think there's a real investment from programs in sort of one big fun hit. So you can bring fun into your program in promotions. You can bring fun in through fun rewards. You can bring fun in through working with fun partners, you know, going to the movies, going for a day out, a game that you play. You know, I think there's lots of ways of bringing fun and joy into your loyalty program. And it should be really important, because how we make our members feel, I think, should actually be more important than what we make them do. And I think if you make it feel good and you make the experiences fun and the rewards fun, then naturally you're going to get better customer engagement, better advocacy, better referral. And then you should naturally then, through that increased kind of love and positive interaction, then see the valuable behaviours that you're trying to drive, you know, spend, frequency and referral. So it's an interesting and quite virtuous circle, I think.
I think probably what's underpinning that is that consumer attention these days is really prime real estate. And you see it with advertising as well, and you know, ad avoidance, ad blockers, pay-per-view, so that, you know, you don't have to watch the ads on Prime or whatever it might be. And things like gamification play to that. Like, if you can get someone's attention by making it fun and engaging, then that's great. You know, you've got their attention. And you see the same thing in the advertising world with personalization. If you can personalize your ads, you get a much better retention rate in terms of ad recall and things like that. And I think we're probably seeing the same thing play out in the loyalty sector.
And it makes an art of the, you know, loyalty has always been a balance of art and science. And I think the art is now coming back into the fore, really, of being able to find those creative ways of engaging people. But with every rise, there's a fall. Things like helping the environment or helping others has seen an absolute trapdoor, as far as I can see in the study. I mean, who wants to be the Berger of the doom that covers
I
that
don't
one?
Think it's Berger, and I'm not sure it's trapdoor either. I think what's happened is, when we did the research in 2022, we were, you know, coming out of a pandemic where everybody was helping others, everybody was very focused on the NHS, and everybody was quite scared. So I think naturally that connecting to others, helping to others, would have peaked during that period. I think the environment, as well as a continuous hot topic, sustainability is important. But what we then naturally see during a cost of living crisis in loyalty, but also in all other areas of life, is actually value comes top. So I think it makes sense to us that value and treats and fun and that's, those sort of things have come up, and that naturally we then see a drop off and a desire to help others and the importance of sustainability. But they haven't disappeared. They're still really important.
But they were 24% about the environment, and now it's 6%.
I think it's low, but I also think it's part of the psyche of the British population, actually. Whenever we sit in qual research, because we're always really keen to understand why, what we see from consumers now is an expectation that brands are doing the right thing. They expect that their brand is helping the environment. They expect that their brand is supporting charity. And actually, it's become a hygiene factor. So I don't think it's gone through the floor. I don't think it's died. I just think that actually what's happening is because the consumers are becoming more sophisticated and more demanding. Actually, they're like, you've got that covered. I know you've got that covered. It's really important. And I think when you then look at how that reflects in the activities that loyalty programs are doing now, there is a real recognition that those things are really important. So I would struggle to name a loyalty program that doesn't support at least one charity. I would struggle to name a loyalty program that doesn't complement its, you know, the master brand's kind of corporate social responsibility and sustainability policies. And, you know, if you'd asked me that question 5 years ago, I could have reeled off hundreds. I think the other kind of key component is that we're seeing loyalty programs attempt now to help people in interesting ways. You know, rewarding sustainable behaviors comes top of the list. So, you know, 71% think it's really important that the loyalty program does help people live more sustainably. 47% want them to reward sustainable behaviors. 39% want rewards to help them live more sustainably. 35% want them to support environmental charities. 27% want partner rewards, actually, where the partner brand has got a really strong environmental story. So it's still there. It's still really important for the long run. But I think naturally, in a cost of living crisis, value goes up. So yeah, I still think it's really important for the long run that loyalty programs are acting in all those areas.
Yeah, I think what you said about table stakes is about right. I think it's still important for the brands to resonate in those areas, and of course, loyalty programs can help them do it. I think the wording of the question is which of the following are important to you in choosing to become or stay a member of a loyalty program?
Exactly.
So I guess they're saying that they're not necessarily the key important thing, but actually that it's still important to see evidence of that within the
base. Exactly. And what will happen is, particularly with the younger demographic, and interestingly, the older demographic as well, they will hold you to account if you don't.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you for doing a fantastic report. Of all the reports that come out, this is by far my favourite. It's got stats that I think every loyalty professional can use. And I can't wait to see the European figures, because I'm really keen to see whether this is a British turn of a corner or this is a European turn of a corner. I'm really keen to see that. I mean, so let's keep the powder dry on that one, and let's get you back in to talk about that research when it comes out.
Well, we will.
So it just comes to say thank you very much for my panel today. So thank you very much, Nick Fishbourne from YouGov. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you very much, Charlie Hills from MandoConnect. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, James Davis from MandoConnect. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you. If you like the podcast, please like, share, or comment on LinkedIn using the hashtag #TheLawtyPodcast, and we'll look forward to your company again soon. Thank you, and goodbye.